In this segment, we will begin our discussion of computerized provider order entry, or CPOE. The aspects of CPOE we will discuss in this segment and the one that follows include a definition, rationale, best practices for implementation, usage, efficiency, and some of the challenges in implementing it. What exactly is CPOE? There is a website that is maintained by the research program of Joan Ash, a professor at Oregon Health and Science University, called cpoe.org. This website defines CPOE as a computer system that allows direct entry of medical orders by the person with the licensure and privileges to do so. Clinical decision support is usually viewed as an essential component of CPOE obtaining its full potential. Another term that is important to know is e-prescribing. E-prescribing is a subset of full CPOE, where the ordering is limited to just prescribing. We will see that there are a number of initiatives that are focused on e-prescribing, as opposed to the full spectrum of CPOE. CPOE truly exemplifies everything we have discussed, and will discuss, about biomedical informatics. First of all, it is about information and not technology. It is used at the place where clinical decision support can have the most impact, the writing of medical orders. Rosenthal commented in 1984 that the single most expensive piece of equipment in a hospital is the doctor's pen because of the orders it can write and the charges that it can generate. All of the issues that play out in CPOE implementation are those that are crucial to informatics, such as organizational structure, attention to workflow, healthcare provider autonomy, and more. Technology also becomes very important with CPOE, as systems must be usable and have very fast response time. What is the rationale for CPOE? One of the important areas is medical errors and patient safety, which is a not uncommon cause of injury and death. In addition, analysis of prescribing errors has shown that many of them could potentially be detected and intercepted with CPOE. Some of the early studies on decision support without full-blown CPOE showed that there was benefit. For example, when test ordering was accompanied either by past results or showing the cost of the test, it was found that physicians could be dissuaded from ordering unnecessary tests. Likewise, the antibiotic assistant at a hospital in Salt Lake City showed that decision support could improve antibiotic selection, decrease cost, decrease adverse drug events, and decrease the hospital length of stay. Clearly, there is potential for the value of CPOE. In an article describing the potential benefits of CPOE, Cooperman noted a number of healthcare processes that it could improve. It could, for example, streamline the order entry process by allowing doses to be selected from menus and completing required orders. CPOE could provide information to the clinician, such as relevant lab results, guidelines, and guided dosing algorithms, as well as perform checks of various kinds of interactions, like drug-drug, drug-allergy, drug-lab, dose ceilings, and drug-patient characteristics. There are a number of best practices that have been noted for implementing CPOE. One of the best lists comes from the Ten Commandments for Effective Clinical Decision Support by David Bates and his colleagues, who note the following. First, speed is everything. You'll see this over and over in informatics. Systems must respond quickly. Clinical decision support should anticipate needs and deliver in real time. It should fit into the workflow. Little things can make a big difference for the clinician if you can save them time or prevent mistakes. Physicians will resist completely stopping doing something. They should ideally be offered alternatives. Similarly, changing direction is easier than stopping, so getting people on the right path is more important than blocking them. Simple interventions work best. For example, the user should only be asked for additional information that is truly needed. Anyone who is implementing CPOE or clinical decision support should monitor its impact, obtain feedback, and be prepared to modify course when the data suggests doing so. Finally, the knowledge that is used in decision support must be well managed and maintained. There are also a number of best practices in organizations when implementing CPOE. Many authors have written about the necessity of organizational readiness. There are a couple of references that are a little dated, but still give the key ideas. Cooperman has listed out some of the key aspects that are needed in organizations. Clearly, the technology must be ready, but the technology is only part of it. There must be clinician buy-in and involvement in training to make sure that they know how to use the specific system. There must be adequate support, especially at the go-live phase. Many organizations will put individuals in units, providing initially 24/7 coverage to launch CPOE. There must be prompt attention to any problems that arise, which there are sure to be. There is also a tool for CPOE readiness that has been developed and published by Stabline. One of the issues that implementers of CPOE might face is, should we do an entire organization at once? For example, a hospital, the so-called Big Bang approach. Or do we implement a phased rollout, unit by unit? The previous adage was against the Big Bang approach. However, a growing number of organizations have found that the Big Bang approach can work effectively if it is well planned. Though Cooperman has argued that when you implement advanced clinical decision support, it might be better to phase it in. Another best practice is the use of order sets. These streamline order entry by reducing the number of steps it takes to put in orders. Order sets consist of all the directions about things like vital signs and rotating the patient and orders for tests and treatments. Order sets are usually based on a specific diagnosis or treatment that's going to be carried out, or they may be based on a medical specialty. When order sets are implemented, we have the ability to provide better guideline-based or ideally evidence-based care, although order sets must be modifiable for local practices. There is a growing amount of experience with order sets, and the consensus is that they are best managed at the departmental level. So there should not be order sets for an entire institution, nor should there be order sets for every single individual. Rather, the ideal process is to get departments such as family medicine, orthopedic surgery, etc., to communicate about consensus practices and build those into the order sets. Then, a reasonable number of order sets can be maintained, and there's still the ability to override individual elements when it is appropriate to do so. This is what a CPOE screen might look like from a VISTA system. Here we are ordering a chest x-ray on a patient. There are a number of quick orders in the system so that the required information can be answered quickly. Once all the information is there, the order can be entered. Of course, there are challenges in implementing CPOE. It is not a mere computer application that you just install on workstations. It really takes a whole organization to implement it. Joan Ash, who has been very involved in people and organizational issues related to CPOE, was the lead author on a consensus statement published in 2003 about implementing CPOE. Her research has shown that, like many large-scale IT applications, CPOE's success in implementation is very dependent on a variety of what she calls special people. This includes the administrative leadership of the organization, from the CEO, who provides top-level support and vision, the CIO, who implements that vision, and the CMIO, who interprets scope and influences his or her peers. Clinical leadership is absolutely essential in something like CPOE. There need to be champions, that is, individuals who support the process. There needs to be engagement of opinion leaders who provide a balanced view for the entire clinical staff. There even needs to be attention to the curmudgeons, or the naysayers, who, if won over, can actually be some of the most constructive advocates. And of course, the support staff is very important to engage to make sure they are committed to achieving a successful result. There are a number of things that you can measure to determine usage of CPOE. For example, you can look at the availability of CPOE. Is it available for use by physicians? What is the inducement? Do they voluntarily use it, or are they required to do so? What is the participation? What are the percentages of physicians who are using CPOE? And what is the saturation? What percentages of all orders are actually entered using CPOE? The most recent large-scale survey shows that CPOE use in the United States is still very modest. Ash and colleagues surveyed 964 hospitals and obtained a 65% response rate, which is pretty good for this type of research. Availability was quite small, with 10% stating complete availability, 6% partial, and the other 84% of hospitals saying it was not available. Additionally, for those hospitals that had CPOE, it was only required for slightly less than half of the physicians in the hospital. We probably want to know if there are clinical benefits of CPOE. Does it actually improve patient care? There have been a number of studies over the years, and the studies reported on this slide are some of the first ones that were done that started to show benefits of CPOE. In 1993, Tierney and colleagues at the Regent Street Institute in Indianapolis found that CPOE led to a 12.7% decrease in total patient charges during a hospitalization and nearly one day shorter length of stay. David Bates, in the first of his many studies, showed that non-intercepted serious medication errors decreased 55% from 10.7 events per 1,000 patient days to 4.86 events per 1,000 patient days, and preventable adverse drug events were reduced by 17%. Bates also showed that CPOE could be beneficial in reducing redundant laboratory tests. Teich and colleagues found that CPOE could improve prescribing behavior of equally efficacious but less costly medications. They looked at a number of different medications, including ondansetron, an expensive drug used for nausea and cancer chemotherapy patients, and found that either guiding the right dose or suggesting an equally effective alternative could provide the same benefits for the patient at a much reduced cost. And finally, Overhage and colleagues looked at the need for and use of corollary orders, or orders that must be done when certain treatments are instituted. They found, for example, that there was increased use of corollary orders as appropriate by about 25% in the monitoring of kidney function in aminoglycoside antibiotics and the monitoring of the coagulation profile when anticoagulation medications are used. Since those initial studies, however, a more mixed picture has emerged. In one pediatric critical care unit studied by Potts and colleagues, prescribing errors were nearly eliminated, but many potential adverse drug events still occurred, mainly because these were not detected by the clinical decision support system. In the highly computerized VA hospital in Salt Lake City, an analysis by Nebaker and colleagues found that there was a higher-than-expected incidence of adverse drug events believed to be, at least in part, due to more vigilant monitoring for such events. However, 27% of the adverse drug events that occurred were attributed to the type of things CPOE and clinical decision support were supposed to eliminate. Finally, in another study of pediatric patients by Walsh and colleagues, commercial CPOE reduced the non-intercepted serious errors by only 7%, and there were no changes in injury rates. The study also identified numerous user interface problems. There have also been some recent studies. One study was an analysis of the results of 6 hospitals in Massachusetts in an attempt to generalize this to other hospitals. The baseline rate of preventable adverse drug events was 10.4% of all patients. It was estimated through the experience of these hospitals that CPOE with decision support could reduce this by 80%, resulting in annual savings in an average hospital of around $2.7 million. The bigger financial picture is that with an investment upfront of $2.1 million and annual maintenance cost of $435,000, a hospital could break even with the CPOE implementation from a purely financial standpoint in 26 months. Ammonworth has published a systematic review. In this review, there were 23 of 25 studies about CPOE that looked at reduction and error rate and found that the relative reduction in error rate ranged from 13 to 99%. Six studies looked at the relative reduction in potential adverse drug events and found reductions between 35 and 98%. This study also found that homegrown systems achieved better results, which is of concern since the average hospital will likely introduce a commercial system. Another systematic review looked at the methodology of some of these studies and found it to be less than ideal. They tended to be either small studies or they had some internal or external validity issues, so probably the bigger picture is that we need to look at all these benefits with a grain of salt. There are also some other research results that are of interest. One concerns the perceptions of drug-drug interaction alerts by both prescribers and pharmacists. There was a study done in Veterans Affairs centers that have CPOE to assess their perceptions on drug-drug interaction alerts. Both the prescribers and pharmacists had a generally positive view of the alerts, but felt that they should be accompanied by management alternatives and more information so they would have guidance on what to do when the alerts appeared. Another study surveyed physicians and their perceptions of clinical decision support, finding that there was some skepticism about its ability to reduce errors and also concern about its impact on the workflow. Finally, one study looked at formulary decision support, which is a type of decision support that looks at guiding prescribers on the use of preferred medications or medications that are on the formulary and the preferred alternatives when equally efficacious medications exist. Typically on a formulary, these medications will be there because some sort of financial arrangements have been arranged to make these particular medications cheaper and identify them as the preferred alternative. This study looked at the use of formulary decision support systems and found that they did lead to an increase in the use of the preferred medications and a concomitant decrease in the more expensive medications. But again, this presumed that everything is equally clinically efficacious, though it was estimated to save about $845,000 per 100,000 patients, which starts to add up to real money when you're talking about millions of individuals. It is also well known that CPOE must include patient-specific clinical decision support to be effective. One study of CPOE focused on drug laboratory monitoring alerts and found no difference in adhering to advice or intervention from a CPOE system versus not having CPOE. One of the big limitations of this system was that the alerting was passive. It was not targeted to specific actions. Likewise, another study showed that when clinical practice guidelines were easily available but not tailored specifically for the patient, there was no increase in the adherence to their use.